Soon after Hamas killed over 1,000 Israelis in their October 7th terror attacks, Israel began bombing Gaza. The goal, according to Israel's cabinet and prime minister, was to root out Hamas and return the hostages that were taken. Since then, much of Gaza has been destroyed. Over 35,000 Palestinian civilians have been killed, and its surviving populace is on the brink of starvation. Israel is currently poised to attack Hamas in Rafah, a border city, now home to hundreds of thousands of refugees. The conflict has destabilized the entire region. Or has it? Fred Pearson is a poli-sci professor and the former director for the Center for Peace and Conflict Studies at Wayne State University. He joins us now. Hello, Fred.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So how much is this a conflict, a culmination of both Israeli and U.S. foreign policy over the past 20 years?
Well, we've had certainly ups and downs about possible peace in the area, mostly down, unfortunately. If we recall, we came close to a peace agreement in 1995-6 in the Oslo peace process under at the time of President Clinton. They were close to an agreement between Prime Minister Rabin and Yasser Arafat, the head of the Palestine Authority at that time. And it got scuttled violently by an extremist Israeli young man who came out and assassinated Rabin. Opposing that agreement vehemently was Bibi Netanyahu. And it may be that he inspired this kind of opposition. We call it rejectionism about peace agreements. Which scuttled the process and led to further conflict, the uprisings of intifadas against Israeli rule that the Palestinians undertook. So after that, it was, you know, you had to recover from that, and it's not been easy. Arafat himself had a good characterization of the two peoples who are conflicting here. In a pamphlet he wrote shortly before his death, he termed the Israeli people a guilt people, which he meant by that the fact that they feel guilty for not resisting sufficiently the Holocaust. And they're determined never again to have it happen. Their slogan, never again. The Palestinian people he called honor people, basically because they've been dishonored throughout history by foreign invaders, occupiers, going all the way back to Persian Empire, Ottoman Turkish Empire, British Empire, and now Israel. And their slogan, he assured, is never give up. So go figure. You have a never again people resisting a never give up people. Compounding that is the fact that they've killed each other's families. In normal warfare, it's killing army to army, basically. Civilians do get killed in the process. But this also has meant, in the Israeli-Palestinian case, direct attacks on people, civilians, and families, as we see demonstrated in Gaza right now. And that's hard to recover from that and get over it and open the way to reconciliation. But there's some people who have been hopeful about this. There's a guy who's been termed Dr. Gaza. His name is Dr. Izzeldin Abu Elaish, who was the first Palestinian doctor in Israeli hospitals. He had his children killed in a tank attack on his apartment building in Gaza in the early 2000s. He immediately called Israeli TV news, reported what was happening in tears, and the Israeli people responded with sympathy at that time. He has since written a book called I Shall Not Hate, which he argues, we got to stop this madness. We can't go on like this. We can't continue this way. And unfortunately, he tells me he's lost over 80 more relatives in this current Gaza fighting. There are other examples of success in reconciliation. There is the group called Combatants for Peace, which are Israeli ex-fighters, soldiers, Palestinian fighters who have joined together to campaign for a peaceful settlement around the world. There's something called Parents Circle, which is people who've lost children on both sides who now are together proposing projects for peaceful relationships. So there are examples that are hopeful, but they're sort of like voices in the wind right now because of the great resentment and retaliation and hostility that's going on.
Yeah, at this point, the war has been going on for over 7 months. At different points, Iran, Syria, and Lebanon have all been involved. How much longer can this conflict possibly go before winding into a broader conflict?
Well, the Israelis think that they're going to knock out Hamas, which is ironic because Netanyahu has been aiding Hamas. Do we know that? We know. There's a new book out in Israel about this. The Israelis were in on the founding of Hamas in the 80s so that it would be a counterweight to the Palestine Authority, the Palestinian Authority, and Arafat complicating his life. And since then, there have been periodic times when they've aided Hamas, most recently in recent years, to keep the pot boiling, to keep the disagreement between these factions in Palestine going so they don't have to negotiate, an mm-hmm. agreement with anybody. There is there is strong opposition to a two-state solution, especially by people who follow Netanyahu.
So and, does that mean we hear it as a talking point for U.S. politicians where they all want a two-state solution, President Biden among them? Is it even remotely feasible?
It's feasible, I believe, but it will take a great deal of careful and strong diplomatic pressure. Actually, ironically, there would have been a two-state solution in 1948. There would have been a Palestine in the partition agreement that created Israel and Palestine. Israel accepted it. The Arab countries around there did not. They immediately militarily attacked Israel, with British officers often leading their armies. And the Israelis defeated them. Strangely enough, oddly enough, but there would have been a Palestinian state. It was aborted by the Arab opposition. Another irony is that Israel bases its legitimacy on the UN resolution establishing it. Today, Israel is very, very, oppositional to the UN. The UN has just recognized the notion of a Palestinian state. The US has vetoed it. Unfortunately, we were one of nine countries only to oppose the recognition that there should be a Palestinian state at the moment. I think we ultimately will want one, but we're not ready to commit.
And how much is the U.S. being a staunch ally of Israel and opposing things like that, multiple vetoes at the U.N. Security Council, how much is that damaging this country's standing on the world stage?
Quite a bit. And, the administration, seeing Israel as an ally, has mixed motives. We fought the Vietnam War basically to show that we stand by our allies, even though it was an ill-fated and ill-conceived war. We're sort of doing that now. We don't want to abandon an ally, but we're trying to put pressure on the ally a little bit, little bit, little bit with withholding arms, some arms, maybe. We could be doing more. There is precedent for limiting Israel. President Eisenhower did it when they invaded Suez Canal with the British and French in 1956. He froze Israeli, British, and French assets in U.S. banks to force them to leave Egypt alone. President Reagan did it in 1982 when we sent troops to Lebanon to prevent Israel from going all the way to Beirut and doing there what they're now doing in Gaza. President Nixon, of all people, with Kissinger, stopped arms shipments to Israel for a period of time in the 73 war to try to pressure for a settlement. So there are precedents for the U.S. actually disciplining the Israeli ally, but it's hard for us to do it because we value them against Iran, we value them as a strategic partner, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and Kissinger famously had his own issues with the state of Israel historically. I wish we had more time, Fred. We'll have to leave it there. That's Fred Pearson. He's a political science professor at Wayne State and the former director for the Center for Peace and Conflict Studies. Thanks a lot, Fred.
Let's hope for better times. Thanks.